Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Ananda Gauti Vaishnava Vrind ki jai. Namacharya Srila Hoyudas Thakur ki jai. Pratisekavu. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sidvaita Gadadha Shivasati Koya Vakta Vrinda Gajaya Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopakapata Sayam Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Gopadan Kijaya Vrinda Avaram Kijaya Maturam Kijaya Vidipdam Kijaya Jagadha Sami Kijaya Yumanamai Kijaya Shimani Vlasi Dev Kijaya Samvita Vakta Vrinda Kijaya Go, Premananda Hari. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Okay, so reading from the 7th canto, chapter 14, text 6. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yataya.
Pitarao,
Putra,
Rataraha,
Shurido, Apare,
Yat,
Vadanti,
Yat,
Ichanti,
Chanumodeta,
Nirmamaha,
Yataya Pitarao Putraha
Vratara Suridopare
Yadvananti
Yadichante
Yadvananti
Yadichante Chanumodeta
Nirmamaha
Yataya Pitarao Putraha
Ratara
Suredo Pare Yadvaranti Yadichati Chanumode Tanirmamaha Yataya Pitarao Putra Ratara Suridopare Yadvedanti Yadichanti Chanumode Tanir Mamaha.
Thank you. Yadvadanti
Yadichanti.
Jammu
Deta
Nirmamaha.
Okay. Gyatayaha.
Relatives and family members.
Pitarau.
Father and mother.
Putra.
Children.
Rataraha.
Brothers.
Suvidaha.
Friends.
Aparei.
And others.
Yat.
Whatever.
Vedanti.
They suggest.
In regard to one's means of livelihood.
Yat.
Whatever.
Ichanti.
They wish.
Cha.
And.
Anumodita.
He should agree.
Nirmamaha.
But without taking them seriously.
So,
translation.
An intelligent man in human society should make his own program of activities very simple. If there are suggestions from his friends, children, parents, brothers, or anyone else, he should externally agree, saying, yes, that is all right. But internally, he should be determined not to create a cumbersome life in which the purpose of life will not be fulfilled. You understand? So actually, there's no purport here, but I'd like to comment on that. So, Om Ganat Tumadandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chachurun Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So it appears that it's recommending that someone be extremely tricky or even deceptive with their parents, friends, children, brothers, and anyone else. In other words, it appears like if your parents tell you to go to school or do this, you just say, that's all right, but you don't do it. Is that what it's saying? No, it's not saying that. It's saying that one who is Krishna conscious, who wants to be devoted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then these different personalities will try to entangle one in the material world. And therefore, at that point, in order to execute a higher principle, then you can say to your parents, your brother, your children, whatever, that's all right, I agree with you, but then do your own thing. It's only in those circumstances, because there are higher principles and lower principles. Oh, Mala, you made that, Keshav.
Mm-hmm.
Your mother made it, right?
That's nice, that's devotion.
So only in those circumstances. Because generally, these different personalities, friends, children, parents, and everything like that, are trying to enjoy you or get something from you. It's like when I, before I joined the movement, or when I joined the movement, my mother said, you should leave this movement and become a doctor. And I said, yes, that is all right. But then I stayed in the movement. And actually, that's the best thing for your parents, too, when you serve Krishna. Just like you're talking about this Pita Paksha, right? You've heard about that before? And what they do sometimes in those ceremonies is, it's a horrible thing. What they do is sometimes they offer to their forefathers kava and cigarettes. You know about that already. But the best thing you should do for your forefathers is not what they ask you to do, but to offer them prasadam. Because your forefathers, you know, of course they may be in hell, they may be, God knows where they are. Because if you're Krishna conscious, they're actually saved from hell. So many generations, either 8, 10, 11 generations backwards and forwards, and horizontally are saved from hell. But otherwise, you should do what's best for a person, not what they ask for. That's very important. Like Prabhupada gave the example of a young boy who had liver disease, and his
he asked his brother for pakoras. And his brother gave him what he asked for, and it killed him. Sometimes you can give someone something, and they think they need it, they want it, and it'd be bad for them. So you should only do things for people that'll be good for them. And ultimately, one has to become detached from this world, from people who are just trying to... I'm not saying parents are always trying to do that, but people are trying to use you for their own sense gratification. I'll tell you a very interesting story. It's a story I was just listening to this morning from this book by... they're called the Jaiva Dharma by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And it's a story of this one businessman. His name was Chandidas. And Chandidas was a very good businessman. And he was making a lot of money, but he had a great fault. He was cheap. He wouldn't spend money even on his own happiness, what to speak of hosting guests at home. Like if a Vaishnav came to his home and said, "Can I have some rotis?" He said, "Get out of here." He just, "Get out of here, no rotis." Actually, Prabhupada said that when someone gets married, they should cry out before they eat. If anyone's hungry, please let them come eat. And the meaning of that is they should engage their house in taking care of guests, taking care of especially Vaishnavas, preaching Krishna consciousness. Just like I go to your home, right? There's so many people here, your parents are taking care of guests. They're great Vaishnavas. Isn't it? You should offer dandavats at your parents' feet every day. And call your father Pita Shri and your mother Mata Shri. Do you do that? What do you call them? You say,
For mom, we call them mommy. And for dad, we call them papa.
Papa. Well, that's all right. But in the traditional system, the children used to touch their parents' feet. Do you do that?
Sometimes.
When they force you to do it. So anyway, so let's get back to the story. So this particular individual, he was really stingy. You know what stingy is? Stingy means he didn't want to spend money on anything, not on guests, even on himself. He lived very austerely. And he was miserly. You know what miserly is? The same thing. Miser means you just want to keep all the money for yourself, or you just stock it under your mattress or something like that. This is like my brother was like that too. Probably still is. And when we were young, he would keep money underneath the mattress in his bed. Of course, I always knew where he kept it, so I was able to take some of it. I was more intelligent. So that's called miserly. He would just hold money in his hand. I love money. He loved the smell of money, you know. And there's even a story. I don't know if you've heard this story. It's about a person named Scrooge. He was in.
Oh, yeah.
You heard the story?
Oh,
yeah. It is the story that's Christmas Carol. I'm not going to tell the story right now because it's not a Krishna conscious story. So. This Chandidas, he was extremely miserly, and then he and his wife had children. Of course, by Chandidas' association, his wife also became like that. Because usually by association, you become like whatever the person you're associating with is like. So his wife and him, they were just like, real miserly. So, and selfish, and all sorts of bad qualities. So what happened is they had children. They had three children, nice sons, putras, and... The children, by their association, became the same way. But there was a problem. So then the father arranged for the children to get married. They got married to nice wives. And the children's wives became the same way by association. So everyone, the whole family was miserly. Then the children started to look at the father and say, "He's an old man, and he's made so much money. We should have it. Maybe we should kill the guy." So, you know, it was a very dangerous situation for the father and mother. Okay, so children would think, "Let's kill this guy." Actually, this happens sometimes. It isn't like certain people in New Zealand that happened to, right? I'm not going to mention any names. that, anyway, we can mention your relatives, isn't it? Father and mother. The parents signed over the house to their son, and then the son just like didn't take care of them and all, wouldn't even let the devotees come to see them. So you have to be careful. Don't sign your wealth over to your children until you die. Then you can put in your will, because you never know what's going to happen. Actually, we have another devotee in Fiji. His name is Subal. He's a very old devotee in the Lombasa area. And so he gave his house and everything to his children. And his children are living in the house, and they put him like in a little shed, a doghouse almost, next to the house. And he's living there without the association of devotees. He's 94 years old. You know Subal?
Yeah.
He used to be a wrestler. Isn't it? So he's very strong.
Yeah. And he used to own business before.
Yeah, he had his business. So he turned everything over to his family. And then his family is just like, you know, they don't let him in the house, basically. And they're eating meat in the house. And he's living in this little shed that's the size of the deity room right next to the house. And of course, I go there and visit him each time. And I tell all the devotees to bring prasadam. So the devotees are helping him. But still, he's in a very miserable condition. Actually, we even had another devotee in Fiji who committed suicide.
Is it Haripa?
Yeah, Haripa. He committed suicide because he was with his family. His family was mistreating him. They weren't Krishna conscious. They were eating meat. And so, these things happen. Anyway, so getting back to the story, Chandidas. So Chandidas has raised these sons, given them everything, and they became miserly along with their wives. So they were thinking, yeah, how can we get our father's wealth? So the father was thinking, Chandidas was thinking, who will take care of my old age? So he said to the sons, he had a meeting with his sons, and he said, my dear sons, I have some hidden wealth that you don't know about. And whoever will take care of me, I'll give them that hidden wealth. Can you imagine that? I mean, he was trying to like buy off his sons at that point, because they had taken all the other wealth. So then the sons had a meeting with their wives, and they said, our father has some hidden wealth, what should we do? And they all met together, and what should we do, what should we do, what should we do? Well, we should steal it and kill him. The story has a happy ending, don't worry about it. So let's first try to send him away and find the hidden wealth. Okay, so they went to the father. And they said, Pita Shri. As they say, too much devotion is a sign of a thief. You understand, when you get really devoted with someone, you know they want something from you. Like I do that sometimes from one of my godbrothers who I've had to borrow money from, I say, oh, my dear godbrother, you know, you're such a wonderful devotee and preacher. And he always says, how much do you want this thing? Anyway, it's actually funny. Yeah, we have a funny relationship. So the son said, Pita Shri, we were thinking that you and Mata Shri should go on pilgrimage to Sridhar Mayapur. Take advantage, and we'll pay for all your expenses, and we'll send you with a nice little Vaishnavi who can take you around Mayapur and show you all of Mayapur. And the parents were thinking, boy, they actually do love us, because they're concerned for our welfare. And so what happened is, the parents embarked in a day or two after that for Sridhar Mayapur. And they were going in a boat across the Mayapur. And they arrived at Kulinagram, which is a place near Mayapur. And what happened is, they were taking prasadam the night. Then one of their friends told them that right after you left, your children broke the locks into your room, took all your money, and that's it. You know, you have no more money. And the parents thought, well, we shouldn't go back. You know, this is too much. So anyway, so they were lamenting, thinking, this is the nature of the world. My children don't actually love me. And so they proceeded to Sridhar Mayapur. And then after a few days, they started to get sentimental again. They started to think, maybe we should go back. you know, they actually do love us. You know, they just needed the money, it's okay. But they actually do love us. And then they were warned by the Vaishnavi who was sending them around, taking them around, that actually if you go back, they'll kill you. And they said, ooh. And they thought about it for a second, and they said, she's right. We should not go back. So then, at that point, they set up a business in Mayapur. But they had learned their lesson. And what they started to do is they started to take care of Vaishnavas and serve all the Vaishnavas in Mayapur. They actually set up a grocery store. And they started to make, because he was a businessman by nature. Actually, a businessman, no matter where you send him, he'll do business. Like if you send him to the forest, he'll start to sell the trees to people. I mean, it's in the blood. You can't stop it. You understand? So if someone's a Brahmin, wherever you send him, he'll preach. If someone's a devotee, wherever you send him, he'll chant. If someone's a Kshatriya, wherever you send him, he'll start a fight. Like Arjuna, even when he was engaged in meditation, he started a fight even with Lord Shiva. Did you know that story?
No.
Okay, I'll tell the story. Arjuna was meditating in order to go to the heavenly planets to get weapons. And he was meditating on Lord Shiva. He was chanting Om Namo Shivaya, Om Namo Shivaya. And while he was meditating, a big pig, which is called a boar, you know the story now, went to attack him. And so he took out his bow and arrows and shot the pig. At the same time, another arrow hit the pig, and that was coming from a Kurata. That means a lower class, excuse me, a lower class man, like a hunter or something like that. And so he said to the lower class man who had shot the arrow, I shot first. And the hunter said, I shot first. And they started to have a fight. And even though he was trying to meditate, he was just fighting over who shot first. That's the mode of passion. Just like the people like to go to these different sporting games. Like last night it was completely full. I guess the stadium was completely full, right? I imagine so. And that's passion, you know. Fight, defeat. But a Brahmana, if he's challenged to a fight, he'll just say, okay, you win. Remember I told you the story about when I was young? We had physical education class. You know what physical education is? And we had wrestling. You like wrestling? So he's not a Brahmin. So when we had wrestling, we said, you know, they say, one, two, three, wrestle. And so when we had wrestling, I said to the other person who was wrestling with my wrestling partner, I said, as soon as they say one, two, three, I'm going to throw myself on my back and you're going to win. Because, you know, there was no intention. I didn't want to win. I mean, what's the use of winning? Isn't it? That's Kshatriya is thinking like that. A Brahmin thinks, you know, what's the use of winning? I just want to chant Hare Krishna. Of course, at that time, I wasn't chanting Hare Krishna. I was more interested in philosophy and studying things like that. And I said, I'm interested in that stuff. But this is a bunch of baboons here. You know what a baboon is? A baboon is a type of monkey. A big monkey. So this particular individual, Chantidas, set up a shop, and he was selling things, making some money, and using the money to serve the Vaishnavas. So his mentality actually changed by being in Mayapur. And then, eventually, he and his wife were able to approach great devotees and take initiation, and they went back to Godhead. So that's a happy ending. So this is something similar to what's being discussed here in this particular verse. And one should be determined, Prabhupada said, one should be determined not to create a cumbersome life. Cumbersome life means basically accepting more than you actually need in order to keep the body and soul together, because it becomes more than necessities. Then it becomes a very cumbersome situation. And actually, the next purport, the verse in purport, talk about that. We can just read that. I'll just read it. Divyam vomam chantariksham vitam achuta nirmatam tat sarvam upayunjana etat kuryat svato buddha. The natural products created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead should be utilized to maintain the bodies and souls of all living entities. The necessities of life are of three types: those produced from the sky, from rainfall, from the earth, from the mines, the seas, and the fields, and from the atmosphere, that which is obtained suddenly and unexpectedly. So Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport that we living entities in different forms are all children of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as confirmed by the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita in the 14th chapter, text 4. Sarva yoni shu kantiha murtiya sambhavantiya tasam brahma mahatyonir aham vija pradapitaha. It should be understood that all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in the material nature, and that I am the seed-giving father. The Supreme Lord Krishna is the father of all living entities in different species and forms. One who is intelligent can see that all living entities in the 8,400,000 bodily forms are part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and are his sons. Everything within the material and spiritual worlds is the property of the Supreme Lord, Ishavasham Idam Sarvam, and therefore everything has a relationship with him. Srila Rupa Goswami says in this regard, Prapanchikateha Bhutya Hari Sampandi Vastunaha Mamukshavi Puritjago Vairagyam Valukatyate. One who rejects anything without knowledge of its relationship to Krishna is incomplete in his renunciation. That's from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.256. Although Mayavadi philosophers say that the material creation is false, actually it is not false, it is factual. But the idea that everything belongs to human society is false. Everything belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for everything is created by him. All living entities, being the Lord's sons, his eternal parts and parcels, have the right to use their father's property by nature's arrangement. As stated in the Upanishads, Tena Chiktena Vunjita Magritha Kashasvidanam. That's from the Isha Upanishad. Everyone should be satisfied with the things allotted him by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No one should encroach upon another's rights or property. In the Bhagavad Gita, it said, Anadbhavanti Bhutani Parajanya Dhanasambhavaha Yagyad Bhavati Parajanyo Yadyakarma Samud Bhavaha. All living bodies subsist on food grains which are produced from rains. Rains are produced by the performance of yajna, sacrifice, and yajna is born of prescribed duties. When food grains are sufficiently produced, both animals and human beings can be nourished without difficulty for their maintenance. This is nature's arrangement. Prakriti kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha. Everyone is acting under the influence of material nature, and only fools think that they can improve upon what God has created. The householders are specifically responsible for seeing that the laws of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are maintained without fighting between men, communities, societies, or nations. Human society should properly utilize the gifts of God, especially the food grains that grow because of rain falling from the sky. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Yagyad Bhavati Parjanyaha. So the rainfall will be regulated, humanity should perform yagyas, sacrifices. Yagyas were previously performed with offerings of oblations, of ghee, and food grains. But in this age, of course, this is no longer possible, for the production of ghee and food grains has diminished because of the sinful life of human society. However, people should take the Krishna consciousness and chant the Hare Krishna mantra as recommended in the Shastras, Yajai Sankirtana Prayare Yajantihi Sumedasa. If people throughout the world take to the Krishna consciousness movement and chant the easy sound vibration of the transcendental name and fame of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there will be no scarcity of rainfall. Consequently, food grains, fruits, and flowers will be properly produced, and all the necessities of life will be easily obtained. Grihasthas or householders should take the responsibility for organizing such natural production. It is therefore said, Tashaiva Heto Prayateta Kovidaha. An intelligent person should try to spread Krishna consciousness through the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, and all the necessities of life will automatically follow. So here Prabhupada is advocating something called simple living and high thinking. Ever heard about that before? Simple living and high thinking. That was Prabhupada's motto. So sometimes we actually become so much attached to the material energy, we take the opposite motto. What's the opposite motto? Complex, complex thinking. Complex living and simple thinking. That's the opposite. And Prabhupada created or wanted to create so many farm communities. You know, farm communities. That means where people would grow vegetables, milk the cows, and live a very simple life. And Prabhupada even wanted devotees to use the oxen to plow the field. You know what an oxen is? Mm-hmm. So an oxen is a bull that's slightly changed. So, and because all these different so-called necessities of modern civilization are not actually necessities. I mean, people can live very, very nicely, peacefully on the land, but we've created all these different artificial necessities, like the phones, the cars, and everything like that. And of course, I'm using all those things. It's not that I'm a hypocrite. I'm using those things to propagate Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada had this idea of making these simple living, high-thinking farm communities. And then what happened is the devotees couldn't live like that because they were too addicted to the modern amenities of life. I remember when I first went to this farm community called New Vrindavan, I stayed there during the summer when Prabhupada was coming, that they had no running water there. No running water, no toilets, practically no showers, no heat in the water. And, you know, first time I got there, I had never been accustomed to living a very simple life before because, anyway, I had a very opulent life before I joined the Hare Krishna movement. I never even washed my own clothes, made my own bed, basically, did anything. I always had my mother do all these things for me. Even, you know, on Sunday, my mother would serve me breakfast in bed. It was a special table. It was like one of those hospital tables that fits under the bed and the table is on top of the bed. So my mother, I'd be just laying in bed. Now, my dear son, it's breakfast in bed. And, of course, she gave me abominable things. But anyway, can you imagine that? Eating, it's such a mushy thing to eat in bed. But it's considered like very opulent in the Western world to be able to eat in bed. Have any of you ever eaten in bed? Except for when you're in the hospital. I mean, that's a different thing. No. Does your mother serve you breakfast in bed on Sunday? No. No, that would be a malacha. Malacha habit.
In Fiji, nobody is used to like that. Even before, you know, you have breakfast, you should brush your teeth and all that, like that.
Yeah, but in rich families, it's different. In very, very rich families, that's what happens. You get people to tie your shoes, you get breakfast in bed. So anyway, so that was what I was brought up in. So then, right after I joined the movement, I went to New Vrindavan to help, you know, prepare for Prabhupada's arrival, cook for Prabhupada and everything like that. And then I went there and I said, you know, where's the bathroom? And they said, it's out there. I said, where's the shower? They said, well, you got to chip away at the ice and take a milk container and pour it over your head. I said, Hare Krishna. I said, oh my God, what kind of movement did I join? So I remember the first morning, you know, taking a bath before Mangalarti, you know, I just was walking outside, it was freezing, it was shaking, and then I walked up to the river, and someone had just taken a bath before me, and he just said, wow, this is so ecstatic, you know. It's very purifying, a cold bath outside. I said, boy, this is crazy. What did I do with my life? And so anyway, so somehow or other, I took the bucket and started to chant really loud. You can imagine pouring ice on you. It was like that. And so then I did it. And somehow or other, I found out where the latrine was. You know, the latrine is like the outside bathroom. It's just like a trench in the ground. You just stoop over, you know, and that's your bathroom. And so it was austere. I mean, it was really austere. And then also, during the week, all we had for prasadam was, you know, no fruit and simply oat water in the morning. It's very austere. Oat water was made from oats, the horse oats, because they had to save money. They didn't have much money at that time. So horse oats are a lot cheaper than human oats. So they would take these horse oats and make oat water out of it, and that was the breakfast. And then lunch was something called pokeweed. In other words, the weed that would grow, you could still eat. It was like a spinach type of thing, with some dal and rotis, you know, chapatis. And it was so austere that what I ended up doing was going into the Didi's garbage and picking up the, you know, the apple cores and things like that. Because there was still stuff left over. You know, because when they cut the Didi's apples, there was always something. So I would eat the cores of the apples and the skin of the mango or whatever it was. Because they were offering nice things to the Didi's. And this way I started eating nice, but eating the Didi's car, which is actually good. I mean, it's actually purifying to eat the...
Like who was the devotee? He used to eat from the garbage, you know, like in Puri?
In Mayapur, there was a devotee who used to eat all the other devotees' remnants, like that. And his name was Kalidas. And because of that, he got the benediction of drinking the foot water in Jagannath Puri of Lord Chaitanya's bathing when he entered the temple of Jagannath Puri. So anyway, somehow or other I was surviving by eating stuff in the garbage, the Didi's garbage, not everyone's garbage actually. And then, but I wasn't accustomed to an austere life, and then I had to learn how to chop wood and everything like that. So it was very good for the mind, to train the mind. And later on, when I opened up a temple in the United States, I had to do similar austerities. I mean, we take a bath outside and pour the water over our heads during the middle of the winter, and the water would freeze by the time it hit the feet. So you had to just like peel your feet off, you know, because your feet would actually be frozen to the deck. And so later on, it enabled me to open up a temple because I had that training in austerity of New Vrindavan, because I never. And later on, I was able to travel in India very austerely. Because in India, when you travel, you know, there's no rest stops, and when the bus stops, it's not that there's some nice rest stop. In some places, actually, the new highways, there is. Like in the Jamuna Expressway to Vrindavan, there is something like that. But so anyway, so I was accustomed to doing that, and then even when we had a temple, I planted flowers, and before I was so much engaged traveling. And I was a sannyasi, but I was planting flowers and vegetables for the deities. And we had a nice garden with so many flowers for Radha and Krishna. But then after I stopped doing that, I couldn't, practically it was very hard to get any other devotee to do it because they would even be vegetables growing and they wouldn't take the trouble to buy them. They would actually go to the supermarket, to pick them. They would actually go to the supermarket to buy vegetables rather than pick the vegetables that were rotting on the vines. And so, because people are very much addicted to an easy life. Even I was in Fiji one time, as in Tabayuni, and we were supposed to take the plane somewhere and to take our breakfast somewhere. But the plane was delayed by like 3 or 4 hours. So everyone was saying, what are you going to do for breakfast? Because it was Sunday, the supermarkets are all closed, even in Tabayuni. And they said, well, we can't eat then. We can't feed you, Maharaj. And I said, all right, what's that tree called there? And they said, well, that's a banana tree. I said, what grows on it? That was my question. I said, bananas. Pick it. Then we looked at another tree. And I said, what's that? And they said, papaya. I said, get me some papaya. And they said, well, it's too high for me. I said, you figure out how to do it. Because papaya is really high. Sometimes. And but there were nice papayas, so they got papayas. And then we were on the beach area, and I said, what's that? I said, nuts grow on that tree. And I said, climb it. Yeah, because they have these nice nuts, actually, in some of the trees there in Fiji. So they were getting nuts and all these different things from the trees. And we had a feast for breakfast. Not, you know, so many preparations, but we had a feast. And I said, see, you can eat without going to the supermarket. And that's in Tabayuni, which is actually the garden island of all of Fiji. I mean, you can grow anything in Tabayuni, basically. It always rains enough. The soil is very fertile in Tabayuni. But they still wanted to get their bananas from a supermarket. And in Fiji, the bananas grow everywhere on the road. Isn't it? I mean, everywhere bananas grow. Yeah, just pick for free. And they're fresh bananas, too. Whereas the ones... And I found out that even in Fiji, they take the bananas and treat them with gas. So they all ripen at the same time. Because I was talking to one of my disciples who runs a juice manufacturer. He's a juice manufacturer in Anandi. And he was showing me different bananas. He said, these are naturally ripened, and these are not. I said, how can you tell the difference between those who are naturally ripe and those who are not? He said, well, in the naturally ripe bananas, you get a few bananas in one bunch that are ripe and the other ones are still green. And the unnaturally ripe, they're all ripe at the same time because they gas them. You understand what I mean? They gas them because, and he said, they don't sell the naturally ripe ones because, you know, people aren't going to want to buy green bananas. They want to buy those nice yellow bananas, and they have to have a whole bunch that is yellow. So when you see a whole bunch of bananas that's yellow, they've been unnaturally ripened.
What do you mean they gas them?
There's some sort of gas that they,
yeah, they
to make them ripen.
They spray it and then throw it into the door.
I mean, they put it in dark somewhere.
Yeah, a few days time, then they open.
So I used to drop sometimes, you know, like when I was doing the testing business, I used to pick for some people, you know, like, there was a place in between Suva and Asino.
Yeah.
So where they used to do that.
Yeah, they would gas it there.
Yeah, boxes of bananas right at the same time.
So even in Fiji, where they grow all these things naturally, you're eating unnatural, chemically treated, you know, through the gas, bananas. I mean, that's how crazy things have gotten. So anyway, so people are very used to something very easy. You've got all the ripe bananas, and of course, they have every piece of fruit has to be exactly nice colored, exactly the same, and otherwise they throw it out. When we first opened up a temple, we had to sometimes go behind, we didn't have much money, we had to go behind the supermarket, and there was tons of good fruit. It just didn't look like perfect, you know, fruit and vegetables. You know that? They throw things out. So people are living a very unnatural life. And then they're having to pay so much for the prasadam or the boga, and they have to pay so much for their automobiles, traveling here and there, and you don't really need that. You can live very simply, but people are too lazy to do that. And so we have many of our farms around the world, especially in the Western world, where nobody's growing any vegetables. We have farms. I'm actually in charge of a big farm in the United States. It's 2,000 acres. And nobody grows any vegetables.
What's the land?
Well, the land, they just have some cows, old cows, wandering the land right now.
The name of the farm?
The name of the farm? It's New Telemann. So, and so nobody's growing any vegetables. And even in New Govardhan, they have to import these things called woofers. You know what woofers are?
No.
Woofers are like hippies that are traveling around the world that probably smoke marijuana. I know they smoke marijuana. They don't follow the regulated principles. And they have to do any gardening there, those are the ones who do all the work. It's amazing. And in America, even the commercial farms, they have to import all the Mexicans to do the work. Because people have become so lazy. And then, on top of that, people are getting sick because they're not out working anymore. They're just sitting behind desks, operating a computer, living a very unnatural life. So the natural life that's being described here in this verse is healthy, it's less expensive, and you have more time for hearing and chanting. Isn't it? Like here, it's a very, you know, here, I'm not saying you should all go back to the farms and tell you, because you won't. Once you get people, like in Fiji, they've experienced when the farmers lost their land and they're in the city, then if the government offers them land again, they won't go back.
Why?
Why? Because they're too addicted to an easy life where you can flip a switch and you get electricity and you just go to the supermarket, you don't have to get your hands dirty. I mean, farming is hard work. It's not easy to go out there in the fields and stoop over and weed the fields and pick
especially
the vegetables.
If you have a big land.
And you get more money when you work for someone.
You get more money when you work for someone else. And you can buy all your vegetables and you just sit home and watch TV. It's easier, isn't it? So that's why people have given up this natural life. And in most countries, you have to import, most first world countries, you have to import people to do the agriculture. I don't know what you do here in this country. Who does the agriculture? I mean, the heavy work.
Islanders. And also, sometimes they employ students on the breaks.
Students on the breaks, islanders, or woofers, you know, things like that. It's because people have become very lazy. Lazy, they become sick, they die earlier, and they're not eating naturally, not eating food that's actually good for them. It's very artificial. A lot of this food. And like Prabhupada says later on, I mean, he talks about pesticides. I think it's the next verse. Yeah, Prabhupada talks about pesticides and so many chemicals that are in the food. And the food doesn't taste so good. Because when you actually grow things naturally, it tastes much better. Just like if you go to Govardhan and you buy the spinach tastes 100 times better. You remember? Did you ever eat spinach at Govardhan when you were there?
No. But we grow spinach at home.
At home, then it tastes better, doesn't it? Much better. Yeah, I think you made me spinach when you were in Govardhan. Your mother made
spinach in Govardhan.
Yeah, you cooked some spinach for me. Yeah. Tasted very good. So anyway, so it's better to live a natural life, and then you have more time for chanting. And hearing, and Krishna Katha in general. So any questions or comments about these things? Yes, Keshav.
See how you said the first world?
First world, you want to know what the first world is?
Because even in my school, they talk about the third world.
third world is like poor life.
First world is like Australia, America, New Zealand, some of the European countries, Canada.
China
is like, it's not quite third world, it's like second world. It's a developing country. But third world countries are like the African countries. India is going to become more like a second world country pretty soon under the jurisdiction of this person named Modi. Narendra Modi. You've heard of him? He's a new prime minister. He's very Krishna conscious.
Mm.
You know what he gives people as gifts?
Krishna deities.
Not deities, what? What do you think?
Bhagavad
Gita.
Oh,
wow.
He gave it to
Italy and China. So he goes to these countries and he gives the Bhagavad Gita. And people say, why are you giving the Bhagavad Gita? Why are you giving a religious text? And he says, this is the best gift you can ever give anyone, the Bhagavad Gita. So India is going to become much better because of that. Because now you have some nice leadership in India.
Mm-hmm.
And he's vegetarian, wants to protect the cows, keep the cows from being slaughtered, wants to purify the Jamuna River, wants to clean the Ganges also. So many good plans like that. So first world means like the countries where everyone just lives and gets sick because they're eating too much. And they're enjoying the fruits of the labor of everybody else.
Children nowadays get obese.
What's that?
Children nowadays get obese.
Rabies?
No, obese.
Oh, I thought you said obese. Obese, yeah. Yeah, it's very common. And children now get type 2 diabetes, which was previously referred, only had by people who were like over 20 or 30 years old.
Wow.
Type 2 diabetes, and they have to take shots.
What shots?
Shots of insulin. So, anyway, so first world countries are using most of the world's resources. If you compare, like, how much oil is being used in America, Australia, New Zealand, these first world countries, and Western Europe, and how much everything, actually, cloth, whatever resources you're talking about, it's more than 50% is being used by like 10% of the human population on Earth. You understand percentages? Like 10%. Let's say there's, 6 billion people on Earth? So what's 10% of 6 billion?
100,000.
100,000? Anyone can figure that out? 1/10? 600 million. 600 million. So 600 million people are actually using more than the rest of the world, which is how much? Take out 600 million out of 6 billion.
5 billion.
600 million, no, 400 million. So you got the majority of people are serving the small amount of people. Like in China, they have these factories where they manufacture iPhones. You heard of an iPhone before?
Yeah.
And the people live in little cubicles and work all day long like that, just putting together these little phones so the people in Australia, New Zealand, and America can enjoy it.
That's why most of the things are made in China.
Yeah, just about everything's made in China now.
Mm-hmm.
Your clothes are made in China, your electronic gadgets are made in China. Even sometimes the deities are made in China. Those little happy dolls, you know, the Gorditai deities are made in China. So you're going to have to learn Chinese in the future. What?
Maharaj, you were talking about your experiences in New Vrindavan.
Yeah.
You know, pouring ice on yourself and so forth.
Yeah.
Devotees are supposed to become more detached or renounced as they advance in spiritual life. So are they expected to become that renounced? I think that's a little too much,
but... And especially as you get older, I don't know if I could do that anymore. You know, at my age, I think it might be detrimental to my health.
Maybe because in this garden, they don't have the facilities, you know? Like,
yeah, we didn't have the facilities. But, you know, even when Prabhupada visited there, he was using the same sort of facilities. I mean, they didn't have any inside bathrooms or inside showers or inside anything. So Prabhupada was there that summer, and I was cooking for him. And there was no running water, so we had to go to the well and use a bucket. It wasn't even a pump well. You know, pump well? You know, a little hand pump or something like that. We had to put a bucket down, fill up these big pails full of water, and bring them into the kitchen to be able to cook with, or to wash the pots. And that was hard work.
I mean, like the way I'm brought up, we used to do that in our house.
Yeah. But can you do that again?
No.
So you've proven my point. Once people move to the city, you know, they don't go back to the country.
How far was the well?
How far down? Wasn't that far. It was about 50 feet down, 50, 60 feet. And you had a rope with a winch on it.
Oh.
And a bucket, you know, you pull it up.
I still remember when you told us that. About that, you had to have cold showers.
Yeah, even in New York, they didn't have enough money for a heater, water heater. So it was like icicles hitting your skin, or like pins hitting your skin when you were taking the shower. But I never got sick from it.
Wow.
Never got sick from it. And Prabhupada said to take a cold shower, you'd be healthier, because we don't force people like that. Yeah.
So is there some kind of yardstick by which we know, you know, we should reach some level of detachment or renunciation?
Yardstick?
You know, like, how do we measure?
I understand what yardstick means, yeah. I think we should be attached to Krishna, and automatically the other things won't be so important. In other words, if we have material amenities, we can use them, certainly. But when they are taken away, let's say there's a natural disaster or something, we have to be equal poised enough to be able to continue to function in spite of that. Because that may happen. It's not, you know, we're very much attached to these things, but let's say there was a atomic bomb that was exploded overhead. Didn't kill anybody, but there would be EMP radiation coming from it that would fry all the electronic chips. And you know what that means? You couldn't start your car. You couldn't, you know, there wouldn't be any electricity. Or even recently, there was an increased sunspot activity. And, you know, if the sun actually is aligned properly with the earth when it shoots off the radiation, it could fry your whole electrical system. They had, in the 1800s, there was an incidence of that when they didn't have electronic chips or anything like that. But what happened is the people using the telegraph, and because there was so much of that radiation coming from the sun at that particular time, then fires were started in all the telegraph offices. You don't know what a telegraph is. Because before they had a telephone. You know what a telephone is? Okay, good. A telegraph was, it's like a little magnet and a little piece of metal. And so when the magnet gets electricity, it goes down. Boop, like that. Boop, boop. You understand what I'm talking about? So you had people like hundreds of kilometers away operating a magnet that was somewhere else.
We're very much attached.
How many people watching?
Nine.
That's good. So you had, there's a slight delay, you know, like that. So you had a magnet being operated by people hundreds of kilometers away, and so the magnet, they could make the magnet go up and down the way they wanted to. And they came up with a code. It was called the Morse code, by which they could determine what the person was saying. Because this is before the telephones were invented. So if it went that's the Morse code for SOS, which means help, save our ship. You know, it was originally used for boats. So there was so that was a telegraph, and all the telegraph offices were fried or burnt. Just because the sunspot activity, you've heard about this before, haven't you? And so, like, if the sun, if this ever happens now, all your satellites will be fried. And that means, how are you going to watch TV now?
Who cares about TV?
What?
Who cares about TV?
Okay. That's good. How can you go on the internet? How can you play your video games? No school, no homework. I mean, in other words, things can fall apart rather easily. It's a very fragile type of civilization. That's the point I'm making.
With too much electricity.
So we have to be ready and Krishna conscious enough, if these things are taken away, to live, to farm, if necessary. I mean, and Prabhupada wanted to establish these farms because he saw the fragility of modern civilization, and how Prabhupada said one day people could be coming to our farms just for food. So even now there's actually farm movements where people are farming in the cities. In Europe it's happening. You know, they get little tiny plots of land, vacant lots, and they grow things, and people are learning how to do that because vegetables and everything are becoming so expensive in Europe. Anyway, so the point is we should be ready if things fall apart. If and when things fall apart, we should be ready and continue our Krishna consciousness, not get so bewildered. We think, oh, now that there's no food, the only thing I have left is for me to eat other people. Or to go fishing or something like that. You know, you should be ready for the austerity. You know, how are you going to function? I mean, when there's no running water, what are you going to do? You know, I remember we've had certain instances in our temple in the United States where we had a hurricane and electricity went off for a day or two. The devotees were just all bewildered. Some of them drove their car away, you know, just like thousands of kilometers away, not quite, hundreds, where there was still electricity. But, you know, I learned to live. Just had some buckets of water in my house and just took a bath like I used to. I didn't die. And we had some canned food and we ate that, you know. Life goes on. But people get so freaked out, you know. What if there's no flush toilet? They'll just explode because they don't know what to do. People are just so much addicted to modern amenities. Anyway, so this is some of the things that Prabhupada. So what's that? One more question.
You said you were reading earlier that the material world is real, but it's temporary.
So therefore, it's, in one sense it's considered real, in another sense it's considered unreal. The unreality is that the forms are very temporary in this world. The energy is real, but the forms are, like it said in the Vedic literature, the material energy in Bhagavad Gita is endlessly mutable. Mutable means like changing all the time. one Greek philosopher said, you can't step into the same river twice, because the river is flowing, so you can't step into the same river twice. So to take these forms, I mean, just like, okay, let's take the example of Keshav and Isha. We have pictures of them, or at least the father's pictures of them, when they were little babies, or not they, but their bodies were little baby bodies. And then pictures of next year, every 6 months, practically speaking, you have pictures of changing bodies. So, is that permanent? Is his body permanent? No, it's changing. I mean, one day he'll be an adult, right? What will you do with your parents? Take care of them? Break into their room and take everything? Like that story I told? I mean, is that real? I mean, is the shape and form of his body real? No, it's changing.
So is that what we mean when we say that sojourn in the material world, is this like a dream?
Yes, like a dream. It's changing. It's no permanent reality. It's like a soap bubble. Like when I was young, we would blow soap bubbles. You ever do that?
Yeah.
And then we'd run after them to catch them. And then they were gone. So that's the point. I mean, of course, this lifetime lasts longer, but it's just like a soap bubble, like bubbles in the ocean. They come and then go. And who will remember you? Who will remember me 100 years from now? Or 500 years from now? Right? Who will remember any of us? And we're thinking we're so important. Like Prabhupada was speaking to Srila Jamal Krishnamurti one time, and he was talking about he said, there are many universes that emanate from the Mahavishnu, unlimited universes that emanate from the Mahavishnu, and there's one small universe, and that's the universe we're in. Our Lord Brahma has four heads, and many of the universes have Lord Brahmas with thousands of heads. So it's a tiny universe, insignificant universe. And then in that universe, there's many planets. And in the universe of many planets, there's one Earth, which is a very insignificant small planet. And in that one Earth, there's many cities, or many countries. And America is one of those countries. And in America, there's many cities. And Los Angeles is one of those cities. In Los Angeles, there's many streets. And there's one street, a very insignificant street, where our temple is, and there's many houses on that street. And there's one house or building on that street. In that house, or in that temple, whatever it is, there's one person amongst many people, and he thinks he is very important. Or he thinks he's the supreme controller or something like that. Jamal Krishnamurti told that story.
Yeah.
The Prabhupada was just trying to bring us down to earth, so to speak, and understand how insignificant each and every one of us is, even though we think we're very significant. We're just like 1/10,000th of the tip of the hair. We're insignificant, practically no material dimensions. But we think everything, you know, I'm so important, everything I own is so important, me, mine. Okay, so that's the nature of this world. That's the unreality. The unreality is we think it's temporary. I mean, whatever happened to that baby's body that Keshav used to have? Where is it now? That cute little baby's body. And then as you grow older, you become less cute. I mean, nobody now puts me on their laps, smells my head anymore, and tells me how cute I was. I am. My mother used to pull my cheek and say, oh, you're so cute. Someone does that to you? Who? But no one does it to me now. And what happened? I'm missing it. So isn't that illusion? Isn't it? What happened to... And like my mother worships my shoes. She has my... baby shoes, bronzed, you know.